Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, I bring you one of my own true stories, a closet confessional. And this one is a doozy. John took me to Red Lobster, where we sat on the same side of the booth, put bibs around one another, and he showed me how to meticulously crack and eat a lobster. He also let me sneak sips of his frozen strawberry daiquiri that came in a keepsake glass that I got to keep. It was all very mature. John was the entire package. He was older, a musician, and experienced. I mean, he knew how to eat a lobster. Oh, Christine, you were so naive. Life was going really well. I was a flight attendant married to a musician. And not just any musician. He was a talented singer-songwriter that I really believed in. Today on Storyworthy, you guys are in for a tale of young love. A story about my first husband. Love Hurts is coming up in just a minute. Stay close. Hey, it's Christine Blackburn, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from my closet in Los Feliz, California. And I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, you're probably wondering why I'm in my closet, and that is because today is a closet confessional. Yay! Now, I've been doing these closet confessionals for you guys all year long, and this is my 10th one. So these are my own true stories of my life, and I've gotten such a great response from you guys, and I really appreciate it. I've talked about my time as a flight attendant. I talked about my time in the Peace Corps, about getting through cancer, about going to the Middle East with Yakov Smirnoff. I mean, I have a lot of stories, you guys. I'm just saying. And this one's actually a little bit similar to the first story I told you last year, which I titled Me in Malibu, A Tale of Two Loves, because that was sort of a heartbreak story. And I gotta tell you guys, today's closet confessional is titled Love Hurts. So, you know, yeah, you pretty much are gonna get it, aren't you? You know, storytelling's funny. It's like the closer you get to a story, sometimes the further away you get from it. So this story I'm about to tell you guys is one that I think in the past I've skewed a little bit. But the way I'm going to tell it to you right now today is exactly the way it happened. And I'm really excited that I finally came to a place, you know, in my storytelling that I'm able to tell you, you know, the exact truth of what went down. And it's very therapeutic, you know? It makes me really happy to hash it out like this because I've learned from it. You know, I've grown since all of this went down, and now I'm a better person. I really am. How about that? Anyway, you guys, so thanks again for tuning into Storyworthy all year long here in 2017. It's been just great. I'm so grateful to each and every one of you. Now, starting in 2018, I'm going to have a new bonus episode every month called My Tennis Buddies, and it's basically me chatting with my tennis buddies because I tell you, I have some really interesting friends I know you guys are going to love. Now, before I get to today's closet confessional, I did want to remind you guys to head on over to storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list. That's all. Wouldn't that be fun? Will you join my mailing list? Yes? Yes. And don't forget to subscribe to Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, NPR One, wherever you guys listen to your shows. You can find out more about me, of course, at christineblackburn.com. All right, you guys, let's do this. My first husband was the kind of musician that plays Brown Eyed Girl in the corner of the bar. Every town has one. I met John Wilson while I was in college. My friends and I went to hear him play in the campus Rathskeller Tuesday nights. John was like a real live jukebox. He could play and sing every song you could think of, including the entire Beatles catalog. He had a harmonica strapped around his neck, and his foot tapped continuously on a tambourine built into the stage. I got my first guitar when I was 12 years old, and it took me 5 years just to learn how to tune it. So to watch John play so effortlessly was a huge turn-on for me. John also played a lot of Dan Fogelberg songs. Now, when I was in 7th grade, I received Dan Fogelberg's Netherlands album for my birthday, and I immediately fell in love with Dan, his love ballads, and the mountains of Colorado. While the other kids in school were listening to the Bee Gees and disco, I was listening to folk rock, romanticizing about living in the mountains with Dan Fogelberg.
An only child alone and wild, a cabinet maker's son.
I wanted to be like Yoko Ono or Linda McCartney or Patty Hansen. In my fantasy, Dan and I would live in a perfect A-frame home in Aspen, and I would cook his meals and inspire him to compose even more love songs to express his love for me, his muse. It was not only my fantasy, I saw it as part of the plan. And now I was 19 years old, completely uninterested in school, still fantasizing about being swept away. And now here was John, a bearded guitarist like Fogelberg, playing that Fogelberg song about seeing his ex-lover in the grocery store on Christmas Eve, and she spills her purse and they laugh until they cry? I was enthralled. The fact that John sent pitchers of beer to me and my underage girlfriends didn't hurt either. John gave me attention, a lot of attention. Don't get me wrong, I had had other boyfriends, but nobody like this. A real musician speaking to me through his music. One Tuesday night, I was chatting with John on his break, lamenting that a friend of mine had killed my grower frog. A grower frog is a tiny tadpole you order by mail. It was $12.99, and ads for them fell out of the Sunday newspaper. The original grower frog kit contains everything you need to grow the amazing grower frog see-through tadpole into a baby froglet. One Sunday, an ad fell out of Parade magazine, and I took that as a sign that I needed to grow a frog. I ordered it, and it arrived 4 weeks later. I named him Howard. A few months later, my neighbor Lynn took Howard out of his tank, and the slimy frog, who was no longer a tadpole, fell to the floor. Lynn panicked and started freaking out. She picked up the frog off the floor and then threw him down the garbage chute in the hallway. I was devastated. And as I told this story to John, I became dramatically devastated again to get even more attention, which I did. The next week, along with guitars and equipment, John carried into the Rathskeller a 10-gallon aquarium separated with water on one side and dirt on the other, and in the middle sat a big, shiny frog. Then John played Dan Fogelberg's obscure love song, Looking for a Lady, and he asked me out.
Looking for a lady, I'm looking for a lady to change my night today.
I knew that frog came into my life for a reason. R.I.P. Howard. On our first date, John took me to Red Lobster, where we sat on the same side of the booth, put bibs around one another, and he showed me how to meticulously crack and eat a lobster. He also let me sneak sips of his frozen strawberry daiquiri that came in a keepsake glass that I got to keep. It was all very mature. After the shrimp poppers and Cheddar Bay biscuits, John snuck me into Mario's Pub in Market Square. I was only 19, but it was easy for him to sneak me in because this was his weekly Friday night gig. It was always packed, and the crowd of drunken businessmen, with their ties off and shirts untucked, were thrilled to see John play each week. They requested the same songs over and over and screamed out the lyrics to Gloria. Those Friday nights became a weekly thing for me. At some point, John bought us keepsake beer mugs from Mario's. Mine read, I'm with a band. His said, I'm with a blonde. The day after our first date was Valentine's Day. The telephone rang and it was the front desk of my dorm. There was a package downstairs for me. I ran to the elevator and took the 9 floors down to the lobby. And when the doors opened, I saw a gigantic basket, bigger than all of the other Valentine bouquets. And it was, of course, from John. And in the basket were 5 gifts with a beautiful handwritten card. Smell the flowers. There were daisies. Taste the apple. And there was a big red apple. Look at the pretty pictures. Faux stained glass pictures to hang in the window. And hear my song. a cassette with a song titled Christine, which he had apparently written in the previous 8 hours. And lastly, he wrote, Feel My Love For You. Wow! With all five senses, I fell in love. Hard. Chon was the entire package. He was older, a musician, and experienced. I mean, he knew how to eat a lobster. A few weeks later, he asked me over to his apartment in the trendiest part of Pittsburgh, Shadyside. And then he asked this question out of the blue. Hey, do you know those DJs, Jimmy and Steve, on the WDVE morning show? Yeah, of course I know Jimmy and Steve. Everybody does, I said. Well, actually, I look just like Steve Hansen. What? How can that be? He's bald, I said. Well, this is actually a hairpiece, he explained. What? Oh, I murmured. In fact, I'm going to take it off. It itches badly. Then he scratched his head, and I saw the hairpiece move. I froze. I had no idea. I didn't even know you could go bald at 31. I didn't know what to say, and I didn't want him to be embarrassed. So I just sat there thinking about the DVE morning show and wondering what the guy coming out of the bathroom was going to look like. A few minutes later, John came out without the hairpiece, and folks, not only did he look like Steve Hansen, he looked like Kojak. But I was impressed with how confident he was without the wig, and I tried not to let it bother me. But it did bother me. It was always a secret. He never performed without his hairpiece. There were always tape tabs on the bathroom floor from the double-sided sticky tape he used to keep the wig on his head. There was a styrofoam wig form on top of the closet that he used to store the wig. It was creepy. But I was his muse, and I overlooked it. And when I was 22 years old, we moved into a new one-bedroom apartment together, and each of us brought along two cats. That made a total of four cats in a one-bedroom apartment. Sweetie, Spook, Stan, and Dave. A few months later, I became a flight attendant, and I was away from home a lot. I missed John so much. I missed his attention and going to his gigs. And then it occurred to me, wait a minute, we could get married, and then he'd have my flight benefits. John liked this idea too, so he could go back and forth to Nashville. He wrote and sang me a love song during the wedding ceremony, and then we flew for free to Europe for our honeymoon. Life was going really well. I was a flight attendant married to a musician. And not just any musician. He was a talented singer-songwriter that I really believed in. To me, John was a star, and I supported him with as much devotion as I had for Dan Fogelberg. A few years later, to add to my flight attendant career, I got my real estate license so that John and I could essentially buy our own house. And soon enough, we found a townhouse that would be perfect as our starter home. Although there were multiple offers on the property, I convinced the sellers to sell it to us, the real estate agent slash flight attendant and her musician husband. I wouldn't let them down. I would make this a seamless transaction. They could count on me. And they did. They selected our offer of, hold on to your hats, $77,000. We would be homeowners. I was already selecting furniture in my head. 2 days after Thanksgiving, 1992, I returned from a 3-day trip. I drove home from the airport as fast as I could, changed out of my uniform and into some sassy going-out clothes, probably high-waisted jeans and a crop top, and then I drove straight to the Fireside Inn where John was playing. Some of my flight attendant friends were coming that night, and I was so excited for them to see John play. Everyone was always so impressed, and I beamed with pride. That's my husband. As I walked into the bar, I could hear John playing Margaritaville. My friends were there, and we danced and drank, and we were having a blast. Finally, it was time for John to take a break. I asked him to borrow the keys to his van so I could show my girlfriends the photographs of the new townhouse we had just bought. The picture was of John and I standing in front of the 2-story end unit holding a banner that read, Look what Santa brought us. My sister printed the banner out on a dot matrix printer at her work. It probably took 30 minutes. We were sending the picture as both a Christmas card and a change of address card. It was funny. It was smart. We were in love. My friends and I stepped out into the parking lot, and the freezing air made us shiver. We hurried into the van, and I started the engine to run the heater. The van was trashed. I couldn't find the pictures underneath the mounds of mail, newspapers, and magazines. But I did find a Christmas card with a dove on it and "Peace on Earth" written across the front. I opened it and read, "John, I'm so sorry you're going through this hard time, but soon it will all be over and we'll be together." I looked up, and John was standing right there at the window. Snow was coming down in the light behind him. I looked in his eyes. He was pale, and he was holding the pictures of our house in his hand. They had been in his jacket pocket the entire time. I put the window down, held up the card, and said, "What the?" He stammered, "It's nothing. It's nothing. She's just a groupie. She's just a friend. A fan, really. She's just a fan." "Like me," I thought. He didn't say anything else. He just turned around and went inside the bar. I sat in the van with my girlfriends, and nobody said a word. It was so quiet, you could almost hear the snow falling. After a few minutes, we went back into the bar, and I pretended that I didn't read what I had just read. It was too humiliating. Instead, I got drunk and danced to "Changes in Latitudes" and "Cheeseburger in Paradise." Later that night, I left my car at the bar and went home with my friend Kathy. John didn't try to stop me. He didn't say, "Come home, we need to talk." He let me leave with Kathy easily, as if to say, "Let's just get this over with." Lying on Kathy's couch in her living room, I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking about what the card said, the way it was signed. Was it Laura or Lauren or Lori? Lara. Lara. Lara Templeton. I know that girl. She's the girl with the bleach blonde hair who always comes to John's gigs. She wore tiny tank tops and was always super tan. She requested that stupid song "Brandy" over and over again. She was younger than me. She and my husband were having an affair. In the morning, Kathy took me to get my car, and then I raced home to confront my husband with my newfound information. I threw open the door to our apartment, ready for a colossal fight, only to find that everything was gone. We had been robbed. I called 911. I started describing what was missing. "The stereo. Yeah, the stereo is gone. 4 guitars are gone. A John Lennon poster. The cats. I can't find all the cats. Sweetie, she's a calico. She's missing. And the other calico, Spook, she's not here." And while I was counting cats, it hit me. He had moved out. I walked back toward our bedroom, and as I glanced in, I saw the dresser. It was empty. He had taken all of the drawers, but not the actual dresser. It stood there with 3 huge gaping holes, like eyes in a mouth, as if to say, "You didn't see this coming?" I told 911 I had made a mistake. I wasn't robbed. But I was robbed. I was robbed of my marriage, my new townhouse, my innocence. A few months later, John's grandmother wrote me a letter asking that I give John an easy divorce because he and Lara were expecting a child together. He got another girl pregnant, and then he had his grandmother tell me? He didn't have any class. He wasn't Dan Fogelberg. He was just a guy that wears a hairpiece and plays brown-eyed girl in the corner of a bar who hits on teenagers. I was now 26 years old, and I realized I don't need to be anyone's muse. I can be the star of my own life. And I dodged a bullet. Okay, pretty sad, right? Sorry, guys. Man, I'll tell you, I wish it's been a long time, so I'm fine, of course. But, you know, it's sad, right? I really hope some girls hear this story and can relate in some way. And maybe somebody else who might be going through something like this and might be suspecting their husband of cheating or, you know, or you're not leading your authentic life, you know. If you're trying to make somebody else's dream come true, that's not the right idea. You got to think of yourself first, you know. It's really important. Trust me, you guys can learn from me, Christine Blackburn. That's what I'm here for. I tell you stories and I save lives. That's what I do. I'm joking. But really, you guys, thanks for listening to this story. This is an important one to me, and I really appreciate your time. Okay, you guys, I'm going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much for listening to my 10th Closet Confessional. If you haven't heard the other ones, please go back and listen to them. You can find all my stuff at christineblackburn.com. Of course, follow me on Twitter at Storyworthy. Let me know that you like this story. Would you do that? I would appreciate that. And join us next week on Storyworthy for the amazing Rick Overton.
I was John Lennon's neighbor back in the 70s. He was over on 72nd. I was on 74th. And I would see him all the time with Yoko. How are you? Very good. How are you? Perfect.
Don't miss Rick Overton next week on Storyworthy. I just want to thank you guys again for supporting me all year long. When I have sponsors and you guys support them, then they send me money. That's how it works. So then I get to continue bringing you Storyworthy. So again, thank you so much for supporting my sponsors. I never advertise for anybody I don't believe in. So trust me when I tell you, whoever I'm talking about, I believe in it. And usually my promo code is Storyworthy. So if you're wondering what the promo code is, try Storyworthy first. And if that doesn't work, you can always email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys, on behalf of everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and the entire Wondery team, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy podcast.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.